This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Political reporter Bob Gibson with the Charlottesville Daily Progress joins us every Monday afternoon to talk politics, and we invite you to join the conversation at 977-1070. Good afternoon, Bob.
Good afternoon. Great to join you.
Absolutely. Always look forward to it. You had your conversation with Governor Kaine last week.
He was on the VTF.
The public radio.
Exactly. Roanoke to Charlottesville. And we had a wonderful conversation about transportation. And he also came out for a bill that advanced today in the Virginia Senate that would make a felony out of cockfighting.
Uh-huh.
For betting or for admission or for things of value. You know, they don't want to go too far. They don't want to penalize people who just have two roosters in the same area. So they decided, we'll just make it a felony, class six felony for showing up at a cockfight and betting, or staging a betting cockfight.
So cockfighting in Virginia is legal as long as you don't charge admission or bet on it.
Virginia is one of three or four states. I think the others that are still legal, and it's going to change. I mean, the folks who are against animal cruelty are going around and changing these laws systematically. The other two states in which it's legal right now under certain conditions are New Mexico and Louisiana.
So
if you want to fight a cock and you don't want to charge admission and you don't want anybody to bet on it, you see these things.
You got to go to New Mexico, Louisiana, or Virginia.
Right. They had a big raid. And the reason they had a big raid in Mecklenburg County down on the Virginia-North Carolina line, this was only 5 miles from North Carolina, is because North Carolina made it a felony last year. So the operators of the cockfights came across the state line and they bought a 138-acre farm, or they arranged to have a cockfighting pit placed on a 138-acre farm in Mecklenburg, and they had several hundred people there just throwing money around. They seized $40,000 in betting money and house money.
Well, that's big money at my house. About you, but that's I had no idea. Now, who's going out for this? I mean, just local farmers or immigrants?
No.
Or?
This was a Latino betting operation. And they arrested 122 people. 22 or 23 of them are likely to be deported to Mexico and Central American nations. But there are also other minority groups and ordinary, you know, longtime Virginians who've been fighting cocks for years.
So the latest is that the legislation to put penalties on this thing for gambling on it and charging admission, that's moving forward.
It is. It was a rough fight in the Senate Agriculture Committee today because the bill only passed 7-5, and it only passed after they weakened it significantly. One of the senators from Chesterfield County, Powhatan County, John Watkins, got up and said, you know, when I was a boy, we would take a couple of roosters and we'd put them in a pen together and see what happened. And the way the bill had been worded coming into the
Welcome to Virginia.
Yes. And the way the bill had been worded coming into the committee this morning, that would have been felonized. That would have been made a felony just to do that. So they basically stripped off the language that would have increased the illegality, and they just stiffened the penalties that currently exist under the current law. So you can't bet, you can't charge admission, you can't have a thing of value exchanged at a cockfight.
You know, V.O. Keith wrote in 1948 that Virginia is a political museum piece.
Well, it's
and
still ticking.
In 2007, we have legislators in our state government that are arguing that we shall be able to have a cockfighting if we want to.
Well, of course. This is Virginia. I mean, it's, you know, Marion DuPont Scott, who lived for many years at Montpelier in Orange County, had a cockfighting pit built into the mansion. President Madison's mansion.
Yeah.
Had a cockfighting pit built into it.
So a long and storied tradition here in old Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the former presidents around here, they knew how to throw a dollar or two onto a cockfight.
And I guess there's libertarians out there who say, you know, I ought to be able to do what I want to do on my land and keep the government out of here. If I want to, you know, have a cockfight out here and invite my friends over, I should be allowed to do that.
It is a controversial piece of legislation. Rob Bell, the delegate from Albemarle, 3 years ago put in, or 4 years ago, put in a bill to ban cockfighting and dogfighting. Very popular measure. The SPCA people went down and testified for it. He was about to lose that bill until he took the cockfighting part out.
Really?
So he had stiffened the penalties for dogfighting, but he did nothing on the cockfighting end because the bill would have died. in the House Ag Committee.
So is dogfighting allowed? You're just not allowed to?
No, dogfighting is not allowed.
Not allowed at all?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But the cockfighting is allowed as long as you don't charge admission.
And you don't bet.
Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress with the very latest on what's going on in your state government down at the state capitol in Richmond. What's the latest on transportation? We hear a lot of talk about that. Last we heard, the Republicans had a plan, but then everybody started talking about how, hey, it's not holding together. It just fell apart as quick as they put it together.
It's still fragile, and no one knows exactly what's going to come out. They have a deadline of Thursday this week for committee action on the two bills. There's a bill on the Senate side that this Republican compromise put together, the people who put it together with the Attorney General, Bob McDonnell. And there's a bill on the House side. The House bill is expected to go through its committee by Wednesday or Thursday and come out and hit the House floor. And they're counting votes, and they think it'll probably pass the House. On the Senate side, it's not so sure. And the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, the bill was not even sent to the Senate Finance Committee. It was sent to the Senate Transportation Committee. The chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, John Chichester, is probably the single most powerful member of the Virginia Senate, all 40. And he opposes this and has some Republicans, some fellow Republicans with him on that. So.
And opposes it because it raises some taxes or?
Well, no. Because, no, he wanted to raise taxes for transportation. Okay. He wanted to do it as a statewide system. This has a potpourri of taxes at the local level. The largest of them being the commercial real estate tax for 11 localities in Hampton Roads and for, you know, five or six localities at least in Northern Virginia. And, The senator objects to the massive borrowing in the bill, $2 billion over the next 20 years, and to the what he calls the raid on the general fund, which is where, you know, education money and all the other functions of government are funded. Now, the general fund has been producing a nice healthy surplus every year now for several years. Since the Gilmore administration, you know, the general fund has been quite healthy. But it doesn't stay healthy over time.
Right, right.
When a recession comes, some of those sources of income start to recede and actually go backwards in terms of their percentage. You know, right now it's a healthy percentage increase every year, but that's not likely to last forever.
Chichester's objections sound like what we're hearing from the governor and from the Democrats.
Well, last year the Senate sided with Governor Kaine. And both parties in the Senate, majority of both parties in the Senate. So the compromise this year is a little, what's different is the senators and the Republican Party agreeing with their House counterparts. And it's not at all sure that they'll be able to get that through the Virginia Senate. It's still very much up in the air.
Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress, our guest. Where are we with redistricting and gerrymandering in Virginia? We spoke with our state senator, Cree Deeds, last Thursday, and congratulated him on making history, on actually getting an anti-gerrymandering bill out of the Virginia Senate. It was passed by the Senate, headed over to the House. All the other redistricting bills in the House have been summarily dismissed, let's just say.
Executed.
What's the fate of Cree's bill as it heads over to the House?
It's going to meet the same fate in the same House committee that killed all the House bills, but it hasn't happened yet because crossover isn't until next Tuesday. So a week from tomorrow, each House will finish its business on its own bills and send them over to the other side and start taking up the bills of the other body. So starting next Wednesday, the kill license is on in the Senate for House bills and in the House for Senate bills. And, you know, they only have 7 weeks and they have 3,000 bills. And a lot of times you'll see bills get through the House in which they originated only to go over and not fare so well on the other side. It's easier to get your own colleagues who you want to vote for your bills in the same House that you're in to vote for your bill than it is to get the other body to vote for your bill.
Right, right. Interesting. I was telling Cree, you know, we're raised in our public schools. I mean, as kids, we're all taught as Americans that gerrymandering is not something that's good. It's not something that's good for democracy. You know, it's where the legislators pick their voters instead of the other way around. And yet, we still have a system here in Virginia that's incredibly gerrymandered.
Well, there are other states that have made it even more of an art form than Virginia has. It's the most political, partisan political activity that a legislature engages in. And, you know, the modern computer software has made it very easy to allow incumbents, given one party control, to choose their own voters. But most of Virginia's map isn't terrible. There are parts of it that are. And the argument of those who oppose these measures to send it to a bipartisan or nonpartisan commission is it's still going to be a political activity. And there's still going to be partisanship creeping into it. It just isn't going to be as blatant. So, it's not a clean thing versus an unclean thing.
Right.
It's an unclean process throughout that nobody ever has completely cleaned up. There are a couple of states that pretty much take the partisanship out of it, but I don't know if you can take all of the partisanship out of it, or if you want to.
Even in Creesville, I think that 99% of the members of this quote-unquote nonpartisan commission are appointed by each party.
Yeah, you'd have six from one party, six from the other party, and they'd get together and pick the 13th member, the independent, who would be the chair. And, you know, that person is either going to be from a church or from a party, or you never
know.
Right.
They're going to lean one way or the other.
Yeah.
Interesting. Political reporter Bob Gibson of the Daily Progress is our guest. Let's take a very quick break. Phone lines are open at 977-1070. This is Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. We're talking with Bob Gibson, political reporter for the Charlottesville Daily Progress. If you'd like to join the conversation, we invite you to give us a call at 977-1070. George is on line one. George, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I'm just curious about Cree Deeds and his attitude on gerrymandering. Did anyone tell him that the district he represents was carefully crafted to be a safe district for Emily Couric, and that consideration runs both directions, and he wouldn't be where he is if it hadn't been for gerrymandering.
I think he's aware of the history. He was a delegate for 10 years before he went over into the Virginia Senate, and is aware of what Democrats used to do, which is exactly what Republicans are doing now. When they had control of the process, they would put Republicans, two of them or three of them, in the same district to get rid of some of the ones they didn't like. And this is exactly what the Republicans did in 2001, saying, it was your turn last time, it's our turn now. And that's why both parties are reluctant to give up that power.
But still, Cree's district, I mean, they definitely carved out a district for Emily Couric. Perhaps it's a fight they didn't want to get involved in. I don't know the internal details of it.
Well, part of it is that when you create good, solid, strong Republican reelection incumbent districts, you have tailing districts. And Emily's was sort of a tailing district between Senator Hanger's district and Bo Trumbo's district down in Botetourt. And they gave the tailings between Bo and Emmett to Emily.
My point is that the benefits run both ways, and I would think both sides would be a little reluctant to chuck them overboard.
And I think they are.
They are reluctant, and each side is as unclean in their hands as the other side.
That is the truth. George, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the call. And, when Cree joined us last week on this program on Thursday, he said, my district was totally created as a Democratic district for Emily Couric. He well aware of that. Bob, what's the latest with the data bank bill, the DNA data bank? We had Captain Chip Harding of Charlottesville Police on a few weeks ago to fill us in on this. Remind us again what the issue is and where what this legislation is and where it is.
It is to correct a mistake that was basically since 1990. Felons who are convicted in Virginia have to give a sample of their DNA when they're convicted, and maybe even before they're convicted. I'm not exactly sure of the time they give the DNA sample, but the data bank stores these thousands and thousands of samples, and then the police are able to solve some crimes, and they've solved 50-some in a 3 or 4 year period in Charlottesville through cold hits. Looking at people who have criminal records and looking at their DNA and matching them with unsolved crimes, DNA from unsolved crimes. There are, however, at least 8,000 of these felons who've been missed in the last 15, 16, 17 years.
Their DNA should be in the bank.
Their DNA should be in the bank, and for some reason it wasn't placed in it, it wasn't registered right, it wasn't collected. There are many reasons, actually, and they're not sure of what all of them are, but this bill would correct that and go back and collect as much of that DNA from those 8,000 or more as they can.
And would it come up with some type of protocol so maybe this doesn't happen in the future?
It would close the hole in the dike, and then it would go after the water that leaked out.
Wow. So where is it right now, the legislation?
It was unanimously endorsed by the House Courts Subcommittee that heard it last week. It's headed for the House Courts of Justice Committee this week. It will certainly be endorsed there and head to the floor of the House, and it'll pass. I mean, there's very little doubt. There's a lot of support for this.
Yeah. Well, here's an example where government's doing the right thing. I mean, this makes sense to have this. If we're going to have this data bank, let's make it work.
Well, a lot of what the General Assembly does is clean up mistakes and unintended errors and consequences from previous legislation. And this is one of those good little bills that cleans up something that should have happened and didn't happen.
Yeah, and certainly Rob Bell is good at those good little bills that sort of tweak and fix.
Well, he knows about the impact of it from having been a prosecutor for 5 years, and that's the kind of legislation he likes to put forward.
Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress is our guest today on Charlottesville Right Now. What is the very latest? You actually wrote recently about the judgeship race. Let's just call it that, the judgeship race here in Albemarle County. What's the very latest on that?
Well, the 12 legislators from the 16th Judicial Circuit have 7 candidates for judgeship to replace Paul M. Petras, who is retiring at the end of this week. Actually, his retirement is effective Thursday.
Wow.
So starting after the 31st of January, there'll be retired judges coming in to handle his docket. But they have not yet settled on which of the 7, the 12 regional state legislators are going to support. There are probably a few favorites in those. Cheryl Higgins is certainly one of those. Bob Downer, like Cheryl Higgins, was rated extremely highly as highly qualified by the Charlottesville-Albemarle Bar Association. He was just reappointed last week to his another term, 6-year term, on his general district court judgeship in Charlottesville.
Does that take him out of the running?
No, it doesn't. But he's probably not as highly supported among the legislators because he's not perceived some people perceive him to be a Democrat. He doesn't claim to be a Democrat, I don't believe, but I think he was appointed by Democrats, and therefore somehow they perceive him to be a Democrat. He is still in the running, and Cheryl Higgins is still in the running, and Jim Camblos is still in the running. Now, Jim Camblos did not get the bar's nod or highly qualified rating, but he has support among the Republican delegates who are in this process. And since 8 out of the 12 are Republicans, and since the Republican caucus in the House and the Senate is the sort of final deciding vote, we don't yet know how much partisanship is going to be employed. We don't yet know whether they will go for Jim Camblos, who is the stronger Republican choice, perhaps among some, or whether they will go for Cheryl Higgins, who's also Republican but has the higher bar recommendation. So I would say that those 3 names are probably the 3 finalists at the moment.
And when can we expect an announcement? Is there a deadline, or do they just do it on their own time?
If they don't do it by the end of the session, if the House and Senate can't agree by the end of the session at the third Saturday of February, or I think that's the final day, then the governor gets the choice for a year interim. But They'll agree. And the 12 haven't agreed when to meet yet, so they'll probably do it sometime in mid-February.
Bob Gibson, you can read his writings, of course, at the Charlottesville Daily Progress in print and online. Thank you, sir. Enjoyed it.
Thank you. It's always good to be here.
Bob joins us every Monday afternoon for a political discussion, and we're going to continue this into the next hour with Mark Bergman of the Virginia Democrats and Sean Kenny of the Virginia Republicans. This is Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.